Well, thank you, Kurt. It's, you know, there's a lot of veterans on this repeater and in the world. They're the ones that, you know, need to be thanked for their service too, you know. But I will leave you with this, that the last thing before we left the beaches, Normandy, was we visited four battery gun emplacement on the top of Point Du Hoc. They were 452 millimeter artillery pieces, coastal guns, pretty much, that were still in place in some heavily fortified concrete bunkers. I mean, these things were ominous looking. And commanded respect standing in front of them and just looking at just the design of them. I'm going to take all of the video and photographs that I have and edit, put it all together on a YouTube video so that, you know, if anybody wants to go and take a look and see for themselves. Pictures are not going to do justice, but I'll make an attempt. But one thing I want to say before you go is that one thing that I walked away with that I wasn't expecting from this whole journey was when I got to the gun emplacements on top of Point Du Hoc, and the guns are still there. Each one received a direct hit from, I think it was the USS Texan. But when you go inside the bunker and see the aftermath of what is still stained on the concrete inside, one thing that I wasn't expecting was when I went to this particular bunker, gun emplacement number two, and saw what was left on the walls, or the stains of what was left on the walls, one thing that struck me really odd was that all four guns were that way, which tells me one thing, that they never left their post. Being an opposing force or not, that still commands respect. At the end of the day, a soldier is a soldier and he does what he's told to do. The ones that make the decisions about why you're fighting, they're really the ones that are accountable. It's hard to hold a soldier accountable and form an opinion about an enemy, if that's the way you want to word it, which at that time they were. I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting walking away from that. Honestly and truthfully, and I'm pretty visible with things like that, is that I was expecting to come out of Normandy and come back home with a deeper amount of, not bitterness, but, because that wasn't my conflict. Bitterness is not the right word, but confirmation that these were, you know, these were evil soldiers. But at the end of the day, what I walked away from was they were doing what they were told, even when it was not fun to do. And I don't know that walked away with a level of respect. I'm not saying that I agree with what they were fighting for, but a level level of respect, because when you see all the bomb craters around that, and they didn't leave their post, that kind of says a lot, to, at least to me. So my point to all this, Kurt, is that we just wanted to, I mean, you did ask, and I'm going to tell you that, you know, what I feel like, in my opinion, was right, was when you have an environment like that and you stay at your post, knowing that, you know, I'm probably not going to walk away from this, but I'm going to do it anyway. That commands respect, whether it was the enemy or not. Just as a human being, I was left with no other option. I had to face that and had to deal and had to process it. And definitely walked away with a different viewpoint. With that. But I, you know, don't want to hold you up. I appreciate you coming and, you know, asking the questions. I enjoy describing that whole experience, because I learned that I don't think the movies that we see do justice. It's not, because there's a lot more story there that people just don't see, especially in a movie. So learned a lot and learned to respect things that I didn't expect I would respect. But it was a good learning experience, and I'll word it that way. 7-3s to you, Kurt. I really enjoyed the conversation. KO4NUE, KO4RMM, and I will be clear with you, sir, or be clear with your final, if you're still in there.
4NUE, KO4RMM, of course, I'm still here, in here, friend. I really appreciate it again, and cannot thank you enough for your I can just feel the sincerity. I can feel the authenticity of your description of someone having just come from there, been there, and I'm just there's part of me that wishes I could have recorded your rendition, your description. But there's also part of me that says, no, you don't need to read your court mat. Just remember it the best I can. So, the fact that, I guess from both sides, you're looking at young men, 18 to 20 to 22, having to do the dirty work of older men, probably our age, and a little older, making the big decisions to decide who lives and who dies, and the fact of going to war and how it's fought. It's a timeless thing. It's a precious thing. Life is precious. And at the end of the day, when you whittle it down to the age of the individual soldier, you're looking at young men just trying to do their duty. And that's a very important bridge just described and portrayed parallel there. So I'll be 73 with you, Chad. I can't thank you enough for taking the time and putting the thought and feeling into your description. I want you to know that it's all very well met on my end, that I'm hanging on every word, and I'm doing my best to just take in every aspect of what you're trying to describe and put forward. So yes, indeed, I wish you a pleasant night, you and Anna, and a good sleep. I enjoy the conversation. I'll remember the conversation, And I guess I look forward to some lighter conversations going forward, friend. I try to tread lightly around veterans. I don't want to be the guy that asks the veteran to go there where they really don't want to go. And I want you to know it's A-okay for just to say, you know, I don't want to talk about it's all. I just want you to know that, you don't have to tell me. I have an uncle who served Vietnam that lost a bunch of buddies in the Navy. He was a pilot. He flew in North Vietnam a lot of times. Five or six going out and came back with three or four to the ship. This was in 1965, 66. Rolling Thunder, A-4 attack jets. He doesn't talk much. The only time I did hear any stories of decent report from him was after he had a few drinks in him at his daughter's wedding. Other than that, he hasn't shared much of anything. So 73, see you. Chad, I appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you again, seeing you again. And you have a great evening, friend, brother. Take care.
Be safe out there, bud. And until next time we talk, I'll be clear. So, KI4 LZI, you still in there, Andy? What you want to do, bud?
KO4 NUE, you have to send Andy my apologies. I owe him here, so it'll be my money on the table. But 73 to you, friend. I'm going to be clear. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you hopefully real soon.
Roger that, bud. Like I said, be safe. All right, well, I'm not sure what to do here, but I guess I'll just put a call out. KK4JBQ, you in there, Larry?
NUE, KK4JBQ. I am here.
Well, I guess Andy stepped out, so I'm just going to put a call out there and check on you, and I know I talked with you this afternoon, but just checking in. So if you want to take it, if not, then that's fine too. We can say 73s and meet up another night. It's all on you.
I've listened to the last hour or so, and just like what was his name, Chad. I hung on every word. And interesting that he would say that he wished he'd recorded it. I was thinking the same thing about the same time, and then he said something that straightened me out. He says, well, something like that should be said and remembered, but not put out to people who really weren't here to hear it from you. Yeah, that straightened me out. So, anyway, that's what I have to say about that. And I don't want to go any deeper with that. I think it was perfect just the way you put it. KK4JBQ.
I understand, Larry. I don't have an issue discussing, just be straight up and tell you that, hey, the last deployment was, it was difficult, but it wasn't all that. I mean, it wasn't anything like what I saw in Normandy, and I just want to be real careful with that any other veteran, you just did what your duty, and but there was no, there wasn't. My deployment was to not anything like what I saw there at all. I did my job. I did what I had to do. I don't even know how to word that really. I guess here it is in a nutshell: is that there's many more. That's so many other veterans out there who had it so much worse than I did. I mean, I didn't have it difficult or bad at all. There were some bad days and some bad nights. Now, I will say that, but nothing like this. And that's it. I understand now why they were called the Greatest Generation. And my goodness, I don't think our generation could deal with that that way. So I just wanted to be kind of clear about that I was not a door kicker. I did a whole lot of nothing, honestly. And communication unit, I mean, you're not a door kicker, that kind of thing, you know. And I hope I haven't portrayed that I'm that at all, because I don't want to convey that's what happened, because that's not that just wasn't in my job description. I did not do that. I didn't do anything like what I saw at Normandy. And I, just won't be straight up about that. Now, but I will tell you that I did earn the Bronze Star on the last deployment. There is a registry online, the Bronze Star Registry, where you can, go validate that if you feel like you need to. It was not a Bronze Star for valor. Bronze Stars are issued in two forms. A Bronze Star with a V device, which is for valor, and then a Bronze Star for an M device for merit. The one that I earned was for merit. There was a little bit of circumstance with it, but I just want to be straight up and say that I didn't do, I did what any other veteran does and did their job, but I never actively went looking to engage or anything like that at all. I just provided comms for the men who did, and that's just the way it is. And I just, like I said, just want to be straight up about that.
I understand what you're saying. But several things that I took away from that. One is your comment about the current generation and whether they could have done the same thing as the Greatest Generation did. Well, certainly not. The mindset has changed. There would be individuals. Yes, there would be individuals. But as a country, we were different. What accounts for a population of people who could do that? I'm sure it was the run-up to the war. I'm sure it was an effort when we couldn't resist entering the war any longer. It raged, and many people lost their lives before we ever engaged. But when we did, it was horrible. We brought horror to what was already a horrible situation to overcome it. There's been lots of words used to try to describe what war means, what war is. The best short thing that one can say is war is hell, right here, and we bring it on ourselves. We tiptoe through hell. That's the imagery that just came to me. Imagine yourself on the edge of it, and you're gonna walk through that. But you don't want to disturb anybody. You don't want anyone to notice you're there. But then it happens. You're noticed. And you know that when that happens, you have to let all hell break loose. And I just think we have raised a different crop of people. And I'm just an onlooker. You know, Don and I don't have any children. We don't have any children to, as parents back here in the States, you know, during that time there were parents who lost children who were still youngsters in their eyes. That great loss that you have to live with is another aspect that should not be overlooked. Well, if I can, and this is conversation that I don't know, some people might say we don't. But this is the right stuff. The radio, and the old man on the mountain there was ready to sign. I should sign too. KK4JBQ. If I can, maybe pick up something out of the conversation that I was just sitting here listening, glued to the radio. When you spoke about the knife that was offered, it brought a big smile on my face, and I thought, well, yeah. See, I worked a lot of years in retail, and I know what it is to sell something. Now, this fellow was selling something that, let's hope that he made. I hope that he was exercising some pride, whether it was well taken or not. I was only selling things at the time that other people had made. They'd made a market for it. They made the product. They provided me with what I needed to know about the product to sell it. Different thing altogether. But I can imagine that was, that the fellow, whether he had any right to or not, he took some pride in the knife that he had made. KK4JBQ.
So let me back up and then move in the same direction you are as far as the knife goes. So When I talked with Kurt and was telling him, I'm not sure that our generation could do what the greatest generation did. Let me clean that up just a little bit. It's hard to imagine the generation that is in question could withstand something like that. So here's my experience before I discuss the knife in the knife store that he did not make. Let me be clear about that. It wasn't this kind of store. It was clearly, you know, he was trying to sell something that wasn't there. That's his deal. But anyway, let me go back to that generation. So here's my experience. So last deployment, we had a lot of shortages as far as manpower goes, a lot of slots that were empty and were not at full manning. And when you get activated, all of your shortages are filled with wherever they can get them. So I left as the company first sergeant, or the lead NCO of that company, and I take care of the soldiers and make sure that their needs are met and that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Trying to figure out how to start this. So one night, 6 or 7 months into the last deployment, we took a lot of rockets and a lot of mortars, and that type of ordnance is a lot more powerful psychologically than it is physically. It's horrible how that affects you, knowing, you know, not knowing. I'll leave that the way it is, because that's difficult to, I mean, I don't mind discussing it, it's just difficult to put into words. But this particular instance, now 7 months into it, somewhere around there, and I had been out of the operating area for over 2 weeks. I had flown to other sites and were checking on soldiers under me to make sure that the units they were attached to were taking care of them and their needs were being met. I'd just gotten back from, it took over 72 hours to get from one site back to Talil where I was stationed. I was tired, let me put it that way. Unbelievably tired. So I laid down in the rack and went to sleep. Being the lead NCO, I had my own sleeping quarters. I did not have to share sleeping quarters with another soldier. But we got attacked that night with rockets, mortars, whatever it was. And I slept through the first wave of rockets. I was that tired. And I was awakened by a pounding on my door. I mean, bam, bam, bam. First sergeant, get up, get up, get up, get up. And I jumped out of the bed and opened the door. And when I opened the door, there were about 15 soldiers standing outside of my door. And every single one of them was between 18 to 20 years old. And those 18-year-old, 19-year-old men and one female, I'd like to add, was ready to go. We are tired of this. Get your gear and let's go do something about it. Normally it's the other way around. The leader says, get your gear and we're going to do something about this. This particular night, that generation in question, albeit was a small number, formed themselves, organized themselves, grouped themselves, and armed themselves without direction, and said, come with us. We're going to go do something about this. Don't think I'll ever forget my response that night. It was not very nice. But the generation that we're talking about, or the one that's in question here, proved me my thoughts of questioning them, proved me wrong that night. And I don't think I'll ever forget that. And two or three of them they didn't even have their full uniform on. They had their PT gear on, their shorts and t-shirt and tennis shoes. And you know, the rest of them's got their full uniform on, and you know, their body armor on and all that. And I just remember looking at one of them and thought, you wanting to go do something about this and you're wearing shorts and a t-shirt? What are you thinking? I mean, they had their, you know, flak jacket on over that, but and all their ammunition, all their magazines, and their rifle and helmet, I mean, in tennis shoes now. You gotta give them something. I mean, I just, you know, I don't think I'll ever forget that, Larry. But, you know, under the right conditions and in the right kind of crucible, you might be surprised. I know that I don't watch the news anymore because it's very upsetting to me. But I learned a lesson that night, I guess, in that you never know. You never know. And I just remember calling home after that happened and talking about it with Anna. Here's what I saw tonight. I mean, I couldn't believe it, you know. But I don't think I'll ever forget that. KO4NUE, KK4JBQ. Go ahead, Larry.
KK4JBQ. Well, I was listening to that, and so many times I'd say, well, now wait, you got to give them, you got to put a big G on their t-shirts for guts. But those are the kind of people, I would think, just my take on it, those are the kind of soldiers that you want to train. Because they got the one thing they need, but they don't have all this other stuff that they need. To use the guts in clinch. And it takes it takes so much training. I have a respect for it that's beyond the words that would describe it. I take it from a lot of life experiences, especially those experiences that you can't do over. You know, the training prepares you for things that you can't do over. So you get it right the first time. So you're absolutely clear. So you're absolutely focused. You're sharp on every edge. And you'll have a good outcome, generally. Guts alone don't get it. But I like you were saying, you have to give them something. You really do. For being aggravated, I suppose, to the point that they were ready to go out and, you know, swat flies if that's what it took. Oh, heaven's sakes. I'll never forget in my jiu-jitsu training, some of the things that were given us to form a mindset, because you have to enter some challenges in life. You have to enter them with a mindset, not just with what you were thinking about in random, but you've got to prepare your mind. And I'm really thankful for those things. They've really probably saved me and saved some other people too. During my lifetime, in civilian life, even. I remember there was a fellow, oh gosh, this takes a long time. Let me recycle this. So I'm going out for the mail, which is a short trip. I went by the road rather than through the backyard. And I found two pieces of mail, I guess, and I'm headed back to the house, and here comes this big guy. I mean, he's twice my size, easily. And he says, you know, I don't like the way you talk to my wife. And from where he was coming from and what he'd said, I had it figured out. That's all he had to say. And I knew it was going to be a problem. The day before, I had been warned by another neighbor that one of the cats that I was looking after was in a box, a live catch box, and I knew her to be pregnant, the cat, and so I took off, and that was mindless of me. It was just a gut reaction. And I went over and I let that cat out of the box. I didn't want her trapped. I didn't want her determined to be too great a risk. You know, we know she's carrying more of the things we're trying to get rid of, so let's do away with her. I let the cat out of the box. And I'd never seen this particular box, this trap. But inside of 3 seconds, I had it open. My mind was going 1,000 miles a minute. So, anyway, she yells at me not to do that. Don't you let that cat out of there. I says, I'm going to let this cat out. And you're aware that she's pregnant, aren't you? Didn't matter to this lady. She was behind a screened-in porch. And she says, I'm going to come out there. And I was interrupted. And I says, please, please don't come out. This won't take a minute. I'm just going to let this cat free, and then I'm gone. Well, that's about the whole exchange. We didn't have any confrontation, she and I. And later I would hear from her husband that he didn't like the fact that I walked onto his property and spoke to his wife that way. And I was only trying to be cautionary but he didn't like it. And he thought me terribly crooked, and he was going to straighten me out. You know, pull me through whatever it was going to take to straighten me out. And I looked at him straight, and I says, "You do not want to do this." And I turned around on my heels and walked away. I was real aware of any steps behind me, because that would have been my switch. No steps behind me. I got probably 15 feet away, and I caught out of the corner of my eye that he was still standing there. And don't you know that 2 weeks later they moved? I don't know if there was a connection, and I don't know what you think about it, but maybe you can tell me what you think about that. KK4JBQ.
Larry, I can see both sides of that. I think that, truthfully, when you stepped onto his property, I think I could see where that would be an issue as far as he goes. On the other hand, too, probably, I think the only thing I would have done differently would have been have contacted animal control at that point and say, this is, you know, I understand what your side of it too. I'm the same way with animals. I get it. But what I'm trying to say is that when you stepped on his personal property, it put you in a justifiable position to where causing harm to your physical self could have been a little bit more easily justified as far as it, from his perspective goes. And I can get that. But I do see the other side of it too. And another way to, you know, possibly have handled that is, well, let me tell you this. So, kind of, sort of, same situation with the soldiers I was telling you about. Is the next morning, after I told them, get your stuff and get back in the rack. You know, y'all aren't going anywhere. You're not getting, you know, there's people on duty out there that's what they do. And they want to do, go get them. And you let them go get them. We're a communication unit. You run your gear so that those guys who like to do that kind of stuff can do their job. That's your job, that's your place, and go do it. Put your gear up and get some rest. But there was a little bit of language in there with how I worded it, but that's just the way first sergeants do, you know. So the next morning, here's the response that I received from these soldiers. The next morning, a group of them went up to the chow hall. This is a big chow hall. It serves four meals a day to roughly, I'd say, 5,000-6,000 troops on this FOB. And they went up to the chow hall and got all of the fruit that was not servable, damaged or had a rotten spot in it or whatever, apples, bananas, oranges, pineapples. There were some pineapples in there. I don't know how many bushels they got. Took a truck up, a Humvee up there, and filled the truck up with it. And went to the HESCO barriers, which is a protection barrier for fragmentation, and was
standing on top of the HESCO barriers, throwing those rotten fruit into Missoula, into the city in Missoula. And it's four or five of them up there throwing fruit. And I came around the corner, and I could not see what, in my mind, what are y'all doing? Why are you doing this? And Cubby, the one of the guys in the group from this questionable generation, he came down and said, "You won't let us do anything about it. So this is what we're going to do. We're gonna throw something at them." And I just thought, "Oh my word! What do you know?" So there you got to there again. You got to give them something. I mean, you know. I don't exactly know what they were thinking, but they were going to do something. And I just, you know, I just remember me and the commander just, I mean, we were laughing about it in his office that, you know, that afternoon. They weren't, they were frustrated. Everybody's frustrated. You know, it's not a whole lot you can do with it. But, you know, sit there and take it. Because by the time they fire a rocket or a mortar, they're already gone. You know, they've already moved. It'd be 30, 40 minutes before you got out there, and you're going to do what? With who? You know? And, you know. But anyway, back to the cat is, I see both sides of it. I do, but I don't think I'd stepped on the man's property. I think I probably would have addressed the situation at the front door by trying to talk with the wife or whoever was home, and just tell them, "Hey, I'm concerned about the cat. Concerned about the animal." And the thing is that with the traps like that, even though it was a live trap, contacting the animal control or the deputy or the sheriff, and have the deputy or some type of governing entity ask the question to the wife, "Okay, well, we understand you're trapping the cats, but what are you doing with them after you trap them?" When that question was asked to the wife, that probably would have terminated any more trapping, because obviously you know what they're doing with them. They're either, you know, destroying the animal, or they're taking them off to another neighborhood to turn them loose. Either one is illegal. But when that governing entity asks that question, "What are you doing with them?" There's a, what's the word? They're accountable for their answer. Well, you know, you can't take them to another neighborhood and turn them loose. Or, no, you can't. You legally can't kill the animal, you know, like that, if that's what you're doing. But not so much, my point to this, Larry, it's not so much out of concern for what the neighbor thought, but that when you step across that property line, you put your physical self in a situation that could have caused you harm. Would also like to add to that I'm the same way, and I had a similar incident happen years ago over a dog that jumped on one of the pigs we had down here in the pasture, and I just remember Alan telling me that when you make decisions like that, to do that, honey, putting me in jeopardy too, and the kids. Because when something happens to you, Miss Donna pays the price too, and or my wife and kids pay the price too. And sometimes, especially in the past, my motivator or my thinking muscle didn't always realize that. But I had the exact same thing happen here years and years ago. But the only difference between mine and your situation was that I ended up killing the dog in the man's yard. Shot the dog with a 12-gauge shotgun. Him and his wife came out on the porch. I know that sounds harsh. There's a lot more to that story that you don't have the information, so try not to form a judgment, because there's a lot more that comes with that. And I remember Dad telling me, too, look, you don't put yourself in harm's way like that, because it can escalate quickly and get out of control. And I'm saying that because your physical life is a lot more valuable than what's in that trap. And if law enforcement may possibly represent both a little safer. I hope I didn't offend you, certainly don't want to sound rude at all, but you did ask. So I'm telling you my opinion. KO4NUE, KK4JBQ.
NUE, KK4JBQ. Well, of course, I left something out. A pivotal piece of information. These were the words that she, best I can recall, that she said to me, claiming that, and this was just right outside in what would normally be their yard, but no one owns a blade of grass here. We are deed restricted. I own the footprint of the house. None of the surrounding property is mine, nor is it theirs. I've been made very aware of that because of my difficulty with erecting any kind of antenna. Another Hammond in conversation about this issue that I have had for, well, I've lived here for almost 22 years. Well, it has been 22 years now. But I've only been a ham for 12. So I signed the covenant and agreement addendum to the lease, to the deed for this property. So I know very well the noose I put my neck in at the time. And I've been trying for 12 years to come up with some way of erecting an antenna that isn't visible. I'm talking more than stealth, because if you're a casual viewer of property, you will very likely overlook a lot of things. But if it's your purpose to go around the property and look for infringements, you're very likely going to catch a lot of things you would otherwise overlook. So anyway, I was quite aware that what she was saying held no water at all, that it's actually nobody's personal property. Coming right up to your foundation. And I know that sounds really odd to someone who owns tens of acres of property, and you have every right to call every inch of it your own. I own no property here. Neither does any other resident here. It's curious. It's awful. But they'll carry me out of here. I don't imagine that Donna and I will be moving now. There were a lot of reasons that caused us to stay past the 5 or 7 years, which is probably average for people moving in the life situation that we were in at the time. But the life situation that we find ourselves now is quite different. You get more attached and more sedentary, and I shouldn't put it that way. It's hard to change residence when you're older. It's hard to take that risk to make that commitment to move and, you know, establish yourself again. Well, anyhow. So, without that...